KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support harmony within ourselves and set the stage for praxis.
Makes you such a threat.
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Joshua.
Te waste lo taya wa chianke chante waste na pechu zapielo le chante itaha obogalake le unkipiki he waste lo ambeto ki le waste kte. Greetings and good day and welcome, my relatives. I shake your hands with a good heart. This is a voice from Earth. It's good for all of us to be here. Today will be a good day. You're listening to First Voices Radio, Antiochus and Ghost Horse, sending you greetings and strength from the highlands of the Esopus, or what Americans and Dutch call the Catskill Mountains. Regardless, it is the highlands of the Esopus in the lands of the Munsee speaking Lenape. This is an all-native hosted, all-native produced First Voices Radio. Liz Hill from the Red Lake Anishinaabe Nation is a producer of First Voices Radio. And you can hear us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Spotify, as well as FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org for archive downloading and listening. And there are other music, social, casting, podcastings out there also. You can look that up. Today we have our two guests, Jonathan Gonzalez and Christian Matute Sagbay, are here in studio. But first, before I introduce them, we have to bring someone in. Mm-hmm. And it's up to one of you two to begin this. And we usually drink water. In my language, it's called Mini. And the translation is voicing the living relationship between you and I and all things. And that's what we say water is in my language, Lakota. So I would like to leave it and start with you, Christian.
Thank you so much. Gratitude, siblings, gratitude, water. Just acknowledging exactly that, the universal solvent that it is. And I've been just seeing water as this crystal recently, so may they shine, water within, throughout, to the crystal that shines through us all. Thank you so much. Peace, peace. Mm. Oh, God, it's okay.
Wow. Oh, okay. So, that was Christian Matute Sagbay, who is often a frequent contributor here. He's from Gualaceo, Ecuador. Yeah, from Quechua, Canary Territory, which still is, and the recognition of his land and the land he comes from, the language that he is always drawn back from and for this language justice, and even looking into the avenues of healing while keeping in mind the need for future generations to also decolonize ourselves, themselves, through expansive and yet relational land-based principles. And this is what he has to offer himself and to you, the kin. And the last word is peace. Mm-hmm. And we do have Jonathan Gonzalez, who was born in Tuxtepec, Oaxaca, Mexico. And he's the youngest of four brothers. And I'm pretty sure he's proud of his parents, who he just returned from in Mexico, in Mexico. And he enjoys working outdoors. And those of you who know Jonathan, he started at a young age after moving to and growing up in Southern California, riding dirt bikes and just being a neighborhood kid. I think we all have the same as on a reservation as it is in Ecuador, as it is in Mexico, as it is in California. So, but insatiably curious for ways of living with Earth, and that we bring that experience into the studio. And there's a lot of years of experience living skills with Earth and in ceremonial ways with many teachers and, as he calls it, elders. And these Earth living skills, participating in with indigenous and Earth-based ceremonies. There's so much that's here. He is Taino from Puerto Rico, also Chinanteco from Mexico and Africa, has dramatically shifted his life over the last 13, 14, 15 years, and he's lucky to be here, he says, and I think that's a great way to start the whole hour that we are on, and we are live here at Kingston Radio, Radio Kingston, and I'd like to thank everybody who's listening to us. My name is Teokasen Ghosthorse, and I am from the Lakota Nation. And this is a no-agenda conversation. We do this a lot in our personal lives because it's whatever the energy there is that in that instant, we talk from that place. And we know that. We've talked about this over the years, and I'm so glad both of you are here. It's an honor to have you both in studio.
Appreciate you so much, as always, Jonathan. So glad to see you again. It's, it's been a while. Mm-hmm. So long that we didn't even realize that you didn't know that I had another baby, you know.
Felicidades.
Gracias. Esmeralda is the four-month-old baby we have now, and hands are full. The earth is calling me back after doing so much of what you had mentioned, language justice work recently. So there's so much to talk about, but I'd love to hear more from you right now.
Well, thank you for being here, Christian. Thank you for inviting us, Teokasin. It's always an honor to be here. You know, I come here not only with our relatives of water. You know, I want to just mention the fire and the eternal fire that's up in the sky and all the fires that are burning right now, you know, and how that's affecting us and all of these elements. They support us all, and including all, you know, our ancestors who I come here proudly, you know, with. And I like to say that in this space, because when we're here together, it feels like maybe I don't need to say it to you two. But because of this format, this radio, maybe some people want to know. And so I say, Liani Yetung. And I say, Liani Re Bomatung. And that's flower, tiger flower in Chinanteco, Liani. And so to me, that's so beautiful and a way of reminding anybody who has heard, who just heard that, myself included, my family, if they're tuning in, that in these original teachings, in these original ways, when the language was shared with us from the source, we were so connected that we greeted each other by saying tiger flower. Mm. Right? So that's something really beautiful that I like to hold on to from my time in Oaxaca, Mexico, you know, and it pushed me a little bit further, you know, a little bit further in my awareness of what I need to unlearn, and more what I need to remember, because it's there. It's in my DNA, just like it's in all of our DNA, these opportunities to remember. So before we go on, I just want to say that and thank you, and it's an honor to be here.
Well, it's good to acknowledge, and I'm hearing in both of you, the earth, the sun, the water, you know, these are the elementals of conscious intelligence that give us thoughts. We drink water, we breathe the plants' air that we have in studio. And thank you for bringing in the plants there. Christian, excuse me. You were talking more a little bit about the sun, you know, and we know we've gotten the Canadian fire smoke down this way. And that's never really happened in my lifetime till I got to New York. I mean, there are quick prairie fires, raging fires that just go quick like a flash flood in where I live. But none of that smoke really got in our way. We avoided it because they were small and contained, and the land knew how much to burn itself. Mm-hmm. So when the lightning struck, it knew how much to burn, and from that came life, right? And I'm thinking, in these fires, you know, what by the way, that's how we kind of all met. It was through fires. We became more intimate because we acknowledged fire first, mm-hmm. like you were saying, mm-hmm. and then we acknowledged each other. But in this society, most people only acknowledge the human component, and they forget what brought us here, right? They may mention it later, but I'm thinking, what does it mean when, you know, you come from Ecuador and you come from Mexico, and I'm from South Dakota, but very, very, how do you say it, very integral part of who we are is the sun, that we are not sun worshipers. Because how could you worship something that's part of you? You see, that's who you are, the energy in us. So I just want to say that, and maybe this will bring some ideas of talking about the sun, the water, your babies, you know, you were talking earlier. Currently, these are avenues that are being distorted in the West as usual. And I say this because that's my experience, this being this old, understanding how many things have been distorted to give a comfort zone to America and American ideas that it's okay to distort the original instructions of Native people. And back in my day, it was New Ageism, but it's turned in now into neoliberals, neo-NGOs, neo-nonprofits. Mm. It's turned into neo because, after all, they have the way of saying, well, this is good for all of us, when it's only good for someone who's the select few who selected these words and the terminology to keep them safe. So you understand what I'm saying here.
Just taking a deep breath there with that. And it is that breath that I understand when I'm tending to a fire that really, like, it guides all these things. When we're looking at a fire, sometimes I'm like, oh, well, there's the element right here. In full effect, but there's other elements that are sustaining it that allows us to have this experience, right? But I'd like to backtrack a tiny bit and just name and uplift that Teocasin, and one of the times we first met, you know, yes, indeed, was around the fire, and another time was really getting these clear instructions about how to acknowledge the consciousness of the fire itself, which was really so amazing to me, in the sense that I've just, you know, started this journey of like connecting to my DNA, to my inner fire, to the elements working more in the land. And so all this was informed through, I would say, land-based work and connecting, you know, also uprooting a lot of what didn't make sense to me, although I was putting the train of, this is what I need to do in life, this is who you are, this is your religion, this is what you believe in. So uprooting all of that, composting all that, and coming into this awareness that, let me greet this primal essence of who, like, we are, even beyond just what sustains us, even beyond what, you know, keeps us warm in the winter, but like besides the commodified version of how I related to fire. Jokas said, let's greet the elder in the room. Mm. Like, what? Yes. And so what a shift it was for me to deepen my practice, and deepen the understanding of, hopefully, the offspring, the children that I come into and tend to their inner fire, their spiritual fire, and that's something that they can only do themselves. But I feel like, you know, as a fire that helps to sort of guide that, in a sense that I do have responsibility to, in my own ways, connect our fires and be like, this, you see, this little flame, this little llamita can be extended and you can share it. Like, this light, as small as it is, can create more fire. So let's be responsible about it, you know? So I don't know, fire has had such deep teachings, and as well as has such fun. Like, let's just go out and like fun and enjoy the stars, and then put out the fires and look at the stars being reflected down into the charcoals, you know? So many of these things. But I'm gonna take another deep breath, acknowledging the fire that's within me and learning to sometimes share that share that breath with you.
Yeah, thank you. For you mentioned responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I've been feeling that a lot. You know, what is it about responsibility, or what is it about the things that sustain us or are around us to bring us joy? Mm-hmm. You know, and to help us bring the tears. What is it about that is for the part for me to play in that responsibility? So I'll just like a really quick story. I was at around a campfire, and you know, and I felt fortunate enough to know this way of lighting a fire in this original way. Maybe, you know, they say science, right, quote unquote, they say something between 1.5 million to 750,000 years human beings have been able to harness the fire. But I was there and I lit this fire and we're sitting around it, and then at some point somebody throws some plastic on the fire. Oof. You know, after I lit it in this way and acknowledge the creation story with the fire, you know, and acknowledge the relationship. And then they threw this element on there. And my instinct was to take this fire, and if I could hold it in my hands, just throw it back into the woods, you know, just throw it back to the earth, spread it all around, like free myself from what I had just seen. And it, you know, I'm sitting at this place where enjoying ourselves, and now I'm in a place where I'm crushed. Like, what's my responsibility? And so I spread the fire out, and all these colors are coming up. You know, it was an intentional, like, this piece of plastic was, the idea was so it could be purple and green and blue and red and, like, beautiful color, right? And I was like, that's not beautiful to me. You know, that feels like you took the elder and you poured that on. Mm-hmm. Or you took somebody who's holding wisdom, some being that we don't even fully understand, and you just poured this on this being, right? And so I took it upon myself to just say what I felt in my heart, you know, shed my tears. And I took some tobacco and I said, you know, I see you and I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't know what else my responsibility was going to take me to, but just like the tears flowed. So I think it was just my responsibility was to say what I felt needed to say, be said, and cry those tears for all of those fires and those fire beings and those people who have that love like that for fire. And you know, not only like, how am I tending this fire, but how is this fire tending me? You know, and so that's what I was left with. How is this fire tending me? So I just wanted to share that because it was such an important feeling, an emotion, an experience that I had so recently, that it's still in my body. It's still, you know, shaking me up.
Yeah, that shook me up when you said it.
Yeah.
I think part of that land acknowledgement goes with acknowledging the elements that make the land. Land is viewed as property or whatever they're doing with it. So the fire, we acknowledge the fire, which is the land. We acknowledge the water, which is the land. We acknowledge the elements that make up the land, right? The stone, the trees, those living on the surface, as well as under. So when it comes to this land acknowledgement, I'm going to take you to this place, is that we hear this a lot.
Yeah.
We hear land acknowledgement left and right. so much so that it's just, we can talk about performance and all that, but this is old words. They've kind of ran the course of being trendy. So, but are there new words we can say without speaking English? Is there a feeling that we feel that we try to express in this language to say, that hurts? And land acknowledgement says, okay, you used to live here, you are here, we acknowledge you, and then it's to business. Right. Yeah, and where's the separation from, where, what happened there? You know, I could go through history and say this is why it happens, but when I think about, and you were, we talked about earlier before we came on the air, the grandfathers, right, our grandfather and medicine. How much further are we being separated from the medicine of these, what we just talked about, of fire, water, stone, the plants? How much farther away are we going to be by continuing to speak a colonial language that keeps separating us every generation through technology, through whatever that is? And you as a young parent, Christian, have so much responsibility to really show these two young children what the reality is compared to, and this is a deeper subject, is, and I don't mean to be so visceral, but imagination and imagination and creation are viewed in the Western as this is something hopeful to look forward to, yet in the reality, it's already created, it's already here. But so we don't, as my friend Elnor Latha would say, we speak a present phobic language, so much so that we don't want to be here. So we'll use our imagination and creativity so that we make sure we're not here. You see? And so if you're in reality, that imagination and that creativity is in the reality, mm-hmm. right? That we are actually living it, acknowledging it. And when you acknowledge the fire and the water, that's imagination, that's creativity in the reality. And so it doesn't go anywhere. It keeps us in the present. Because you talked about the fire. Both of you talked about the water. So fire is always available. Water is always available. But what is making it not so available? What is making it so that it's trying to teach us a lesson and no one's listening because we're still throwing NGO money at it, we're throwing nonprofit money at it, we're throwing everything, neoliberalism at it, we're throwing all these political maneuvers, I guess, money. But again, Earth is not going to play that game. Now we have to really get real. Anything that we think we're doing environmentally in this society, Earth is not playing that game. You see where I'm going with this?
And time is also really against us in so many ways. Like, just realizing recently when we had all these thunderstorms and these heavy downpours recently, you know, it's been such a contrast year as from last year as far as like how much water we've been getting. But I've been trying to listen to the earth in that, where is it pulling up from last year? And before it was even raining, there was portions in the land where I'm at right now where it was just holding a lot of water and I was like feeling stagnant. And now that it's raining this year so much, the same areas is being absorbed. It's not being stagnant. So there's a shift that I've been noticing in just being kind of like being awareness to myself, but like not still sure exactly aware what the earth is trying to tell me yet. So I'm listening, we're listening, you know. But the other thing that this reminded me of is that in this recent showers, the lightning storm actually knocked down some electrical components in the area where we're living. The Wi-Fi went out and this electrical car wouldn't start. So, you know, it's really good to be aware of how much the Western way of thinking of problem solving is really bringing us to more problems. We're like creating walls. It's like we're gonna keep hitting, like, oh, we have to electrify everything, and this is the way, but yet we're extracting so much from the earth. Mm-hmm. We're like, polluting, and it's still slavery is happening, and child, like, abuse and work, and all these things are still such a real reality in quote unquote third world countries, which is such a it's like such a term, like, why did I even use it? I'm sorry. But it's so interesting how we need to step back, we need to breathe more, and sometimes these heavy downpours in certain areas where it floods, it's like, it'll bring us together for a little bit and think about what we're doing to the earth, but then after we have something's fixed, we go back to our regular lives, our regular consumption. And I say that with the knowledge that, look, I'm driving a car that uses gasoline, and we've had these talks with my babies, where Sacha's old enough to know, like, asking questions like, when we're riding bicycles, what kind of power does this use? Well, explain all the detrimental aspects of fuel extraction, and it's like, well, right now I'm using my legs, I'm using this air that's coming in, I'm using the earth feeding me energy, I'm using the consciousness going forward, it's so much, and he's so aware of that, and then he asks us, what about the car, what about those, and I'm like, this is hard, how do I do this? I'm like praying that our consciousness as humanity shifts, so that when we get a new I would say awarenesses of what other technology we use is not weaponized. It's not used to solve a problem that we have, when it's like, we just need to let go. When there's a certain collectiveness that needs to happen in putting our foot down and saying, like, this really isn't right. And I've seen it happen in many smaller circles, but there's still more awarenesses that we're inviting. And through the ground, talking to the water itself, like, one practice I'm also sharing with Sacha is, like, gratitude to the water. I love you, water. And this water will carry it where it needs to be carried, and we're changing the structure, the molecular structure, just by talking to water, just by talking to earth. So let's keep doing it.
Well, I love to hear you talk about your kids. Yeah, I just love it. I know. Because you said earth is not going to play this game. Yeah. I don't think kids are playing as much joy and fun and play they are. When they ask those questions, they're not playing. They're speaking the language of Earth, because they're right there. They're so close. They're so close. And that's why I just love working with young ones, especially the little kids. But, because they have that, the relativity is alive. It's awake in them. And it might not even be like a conscious thing, right? Mm. But they're asking that question. Mm. Somebody last night, somebody was saying, oh, my kid is asking like that question about Columbus, like, how could he have discovered this place, how could he have done that? They're seven.
Yeah.
I said, yes, because they know that innocence means asking the question,
right?
And when can we as adults, quote, when can we start asking those questions? Or are we too afraid of the answers? Because those questions, the answers to those questions might put us in a space of saying, oh, this, all of this around us, on the street, it's actually, it's so, so recently taking shape. Mm. And what is original out there has been millions of years. And so I can't understand that, so I'm not going to ask the question about it, But these young people, they'll ask the questions.
That's great. Yeah, we're going to have to take a break here. We'll come back with what questions will the young people be asking. We can use that thought, and I would end with this section of First Voices Radio with, with the thought that what we're saying here, what you are saying, Christian, can often be turned into mythology. Mm-hmm. That our stories aren't real, mm-hmm. that it's something that's quaint and nice to talk about, but we'll come back with a little bit about that and what questions will the children be asking in the future. We'll be right back with you. This is Teoxin Ghost Source with First Voices Radio. That last song was In the Land of the Blind by Chet Faker off the album Lockdown 2020. It said a lot to think about the land of the blind in 2020. What was going on in 2020? Not enough knowledge, censorship. You can go all to that. But this is First Voices Radio. My name is Teoksan Ghosthorse. I'm in studio with Jonathan Gonzalez and Christian Matute Sagbay from Ecuador and Mexico. And we are talking about the voices of children in the future and what we see. You work with children. You have current young children. My children are grown up. And so this is a generational movement, as you see a flow going on here. What questions would they be asking? Could we come from the Western side where things are going to be empty and there's no future for them? Or do we stay here and do the work, supposedly, do what's required so that if we ensure that there is a future, so to speak, because we know what happened in the past, right? I think it's really understanding what stories that we have. And I was mentioning that the mythology, our stories are made into mythology. Is it that we want to sit and talk about war all day long and profit margins and who's speaking the loudest, who's voting? And is it that way? Because Earth is certainly not playing that game.
No, indeed. And this is bringing me back a little bit to how just this concept of plant medicines have been taken way out of context, especially in the way we've commodified it now. One clear example, very, very clear, is tobacco. Tobacco being used as, in our ancestral ways, simply as medicine, talking and ushering in the land and the ways of offering to the land. And now it's just obviously found in cigarettes, and we know what the damage has been there. So this like shift of like, I'm gonna take what you know and how what you use. So tobacco being one, coca leaves is another one, and then turning and giving you a product where it can be mass produced and it can be sold, and sort of like an addiction's been forming there because of these just terrible uses of plants, right? And now what's sort of like looming in the current world, or where sort of like I've seen in certain circles, is this idea of commodifying it's such a powerful root. Some people know it as ayahuasca, other people call it uni. There's many names for it. Similar plants like San Pedro, which is one that I've had the ability to commune with a intentional communing Ecuador, by the sort of like Amazonian region of the Ecuador and bordering Peru in Yansata. But just seeing how we do it in culture, in circles, around fire, and how when it's brought and commodified and putting it in, like, I don't know, these like amazing retreats and like all this like just comfort around medicine, instead of letting the medicine talk to you, letting the medicine really guide you through it, through the humble origins and beginnings of where it is, like in the land, as opposed to like this somehow just commercialized versions. And I'm like afraid, like, for folks, for our collective psyche, like what that's gonna happen, what that does, because from the quote-unquote scientific understanding, we know that many of these plants are acting upon our pineal gland, or the dimethyltryptamine chemicals. And if we're in a really, just let's say, emotionally or psychologically unstable place in our lives, that when we come to try to, as a last minute result, to the plant and just go into these special retreats, it might actually backfire. It might actually do like long-term damage, in the awareness that, hey, like the vibration of where we're coming from and the relationship that we're approaching these plant medicines is out of the context of where it came from. So I would just uplift, you know, the going back to the people who brought it, you know, going back to the lands where it was raised and tended to for many, many generations, and honoring the ways that they do it, and letting it come to you as opposed to seeking it. Mm. Because we have so much sensationalism online with all these documentaries about it, and you know, I see it like I always try to look at the positive of some situations. In this sense, it's like, okay, advocating for new ways of treating chronic, I would say, you know, diseases, mental, or just this ease, lack of ease in the Western society, but it can't be done just by that approach of like, here, take this pill, take this round of ayahuasca, and you'll cure yourself. It's not like that. I would say, go back to the culture, learn humbly about it, and let it speak to you. Don't go like a mad person going to seek for it, you know? It's expensive, so...
No, there's a lot to think. Excuse me. There's a lot to think about. You know, you said something, and what natives who aren't living with these plants—tobacco, coca leaves, ayahuasca, San Pedro, peyote—what natives cannot afford them?
Right.
Who has the money to afford the shipments, the abuse of them, and? In those circles, if any, I don't see any native people. Mm. We can't afford them, but we live with them. And a few months ago, I had on this Manuel Rosenthal. Mm. And he did talk about the four children that were lost in the jungle in Peru from the ages of 14 until 4, I think it was, and how that one family were fleeing from what I deem as the drug cartel and the military. Both were in working with each other. But they played the press to say that they found the four young children with GPS technology. But it was really one of the indigenous peoples. So there was all these, for 40 days, these technology, military were out there looking, because that's what they were supposed to do. But they could not find these children. The plane crashed. Four children survived. What happened out of that was the indigenous peoples came forward. And one man came out and said, I can find them by asking the earth. Basically, these are my words. And what happened from that point is that this is a plant. See, this is out there already, so I'm not spilling a secret. This is a plant that you cannot take with others. Mm-hmm. So he went alone because of his age and experience with it. Mm-hmm. He went into the jungle and he came within talking, and he did talk to the spirit of earth. Mm-hmm. See, now how much can that be mythologized? Oh, this is mumbo jumbo. Because it's not happening in a church.
Right.
And he came away with the earth was angry that he even came there, because that means they're going to bring Western technology, Western thinking into finding these children. So this is what Mother Earth is saying about that other way of thinking. So he said, I would give my life for these four children. And that was up for negotiation later, right, with Mother Earth. So he was given, he went to the indigenous guard, the 100 indigenous guard that came. Indigenous guard do not have weapons. So they came, and no matter what elite rescuers came from today's modern GPS and all that, survivor skills, could not find these four children. So they went to the indigenous peoples, and only 20 of them were able to go into the jungle where there is no light at the floor of the jungle. And they used, and this guy came and said, this is where the spirit said to find them. And in that time, boom, they found the four children because of the communication with the plant. Now you take that and go with these retreats, these a step backward, you can call it, or a set of an act of retiring or withdrawing. It's basically a military, using military technique or technicals or technology to retreat, surrender. All these things are war languages. So when I think about how can we afford that, the indigenous guard in Peru found it without any money. They found it because they were still rich in following the instructions of the earth. You see where I'm going with this? Is that we talk about these plants. Yes, tobacco is abused. So is sage, you know, coca leaves, ayahuasca, San Pedro, peyote. All of these are abused by who? I don't think they're abused by Native people so much, but Native people are learning how to abuse these plants, as you were mentioning, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's a serious issue. As we know, we've talked about this off the air quite a bit around fires, and, you know, people are not being paid attention to, like Marina Sabina with the mushrooms, right? And people that we know individually coming from these countries saying it's killing our culture. But Americans, will they ever really hear or listen to that? Because it's really messages of the plant that we were talking about.
Yeah. What I'm hearing that's the missing part is relationship, relativity, and understanding, and that intuition, and how that relativity and that relationship speaks through these plant spirit medicines, this earth, the medicine that we started off with. You know, we don't have that relationship as a society. I won't say culture, because I don't know if we have culture here in, you know, the U.S. or what that exactly is, what that even means. But it's easy to look back to indigenous communities and see the culture, name the culture, feel it, right? And there's relationship. And so when I see folks taking these medicines and not understanding the stories like Dr. Rosenthal, Manuel Rosenthal, had shared with us, and I listened to that multiple times because there was something so, the essence of what he was saying to me hit so deeply that that it was all about relationship. And to for the elder of the community to be with, speaking with the spirit of the jungle, speaking with the spirit of the earth, that is deep relationship that we oftentimes forget, or we don't even remember that we've forgotten, you know. And so, like, we were sitting with a Mohawk woman, and she said, well, we need to remember what we forgot to remember, right? So it's all those layers. At every layer, there's an element of we've forgotten, or we didn't remember. And that's what I see happening. And, you know, to see people take it, call it medicine, but abuse it, yet still, it's not. It's like they're looking for the pill, but they've come across these Niños Santos, these yahe, this tobacco, whatever it is. And just consume and consume and consume, really, in that real kind of Western-minded consumerism way. And you can think about that in all of the medicine that we're talking about, including the water, right? Including water. But right now, because of this, like, these psychonauts or whatever we're calling them, all the different ways of they how they identify their pathway through these plants, through the toads, through the frogs, through the cactus, right, through the fungus, whatever it is that people decide that they're gonna find healing, that in puts the space in between well-being and relationship, right? So they go for these healing aspects. It's really in some ways great that they're even asking these questions. But when I think of these little children asking, well, what's the next layer of question? It says, well, what is well-being? You know, what is balance? You know, what is medicine? You know, like when you shared about Sacha saying, oh, you're going to the medicine water, mm-hmm. you know, there's already a relationship that they're looking at, you know, that's saying, oh, water is medicine, you know, and Papa, you know, Tata, you know, he's going for the medicine right there. Mm-hmm. He's surrendering and in relationship. And that's what we're too afraid in the society to surrender to the relationship, because it brings up so much. It brings up so much history that we're not ready to, like, explore. And when we do, we center our emotions, and it's like, oh, well, then you lost it again. You've forgotten again.
Just a lot to say, a lot to think about, stirring feeling rather than emotion, you know. And what we're talking about is different, and I'm thinking, this, why is it different that I hear it differently than hearing to other shows on the news or whatever, and is often referred to. No one's talking about this. We are talking about the war against Earth. Others are talking about the war against humans on humans, which is convenient thinking. It's an easy go-to. It's a tennis match back and forth. But we are talking about the war against Earth, the abuse against Earth. I would like to think that, right?
Yeah.
But we have a few minutes here. Again, at time, if we get warmed up. 2 hours, right? Yeah, let's go. But no, hours, Christian, yeah. Go ahead. You got a couple minutes or a minute or so. Yeah.
I mean, there's so much, as always, that's connected. And speaking of, I almost want to, like, shift the energy a little bit here, mm-hmm. when we're thinking about what the children ask nowadays, mm-hmm. as well. One of the things that Sacha was asking Mami Mika the other day, because God bless Mami Mika, my goodness, mm-hmm. wouldn't be here without that creator. But that he was asking about, actually, as well, Like, how does he know that he's a boy? Like, we have this, like, duality of our minds and, you know, and what it means to define someone so early. You know, even my mom's already asking Esme to have earrings. And I just got earrings myself as an autonomous choice, you know, and, like, what that means for me as well. But going back to what Sasha was saying is, like, it's so powerful to think about nowadays, like, what how to guide that question. And one of the things, you know, we had friends around us say a little bit about, like, hey, you know, this is an evolving thing. There are certain parts that define you, and or at least that you could use, that maybe they don't define you later on. Right now it might, but in a sense, you're gonna find out through yourself, as, like, the earth molds us, like the earth, we get to use clay to make our own buildings and make that breathable and make that sustainable for us. Maybe you can use the earth as your teacher to help you define what that means for you as well. So that's something that I would carry forward, you know, as far as, like, how much the earth can constantly teach us at every turn, and that we can stop being in a war with the earth, even when it comes to things such as gender, which has been such a hot topic nowadays.
And we'll talk about that next time we meet.
Yeah.
To keep that one. Jonathan, any final word here? Got a minute?
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm always reminded of when I hear you say, and I've heard others say, the earth needs you. Yeah. And I know the earth may not need all of us, but it needs those of us who are in love with her, who have a relationship with her, who want to protect her. Because if there's a war out there against earth, which I believe that to be the truth, then she needs us. And I said this to a group of 40 kids the other day, said, the earth needs you. And so my hope is they're asking, what's that mean?
Yeah. Very true. That's a deep question. Four-year-old child says, Dad, if Earth is our mother, then who's Mother Earth's mother? Mm-hmm. And what did I do? What did my friend do? Both went to our mothers. And she said, seed.
Seed.
Ooh. That's it. You know, these are four-year-old children. So anyway, it's an honor to have both of you here in First Voices Radio. Really, we could go another hour, as you say, but even that, we have fires, and that's good. We sit around fires, and we talk, and we get whenever we can get together, right? And so those of you listening out there, just kind of pay attention to what we're saying, because you know us in the community. And this community is here as well as in Peru and Ecuador and Mexico and Washington and Canada, all the names, these other names, right? But that's who we are. And we are community with Earth, not just community on Earth. And in a good way, we say, Omakashka, we live with all the other species or beings of Earth on the surface. And that's our community. Mm-hmm. So want to say that, and want to thank you for being here, Christian.
Thank you.
And Jonathan.
Hanhankatu.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Thank you, Karen Ramirez, for engineering our little discussion here. And we'll return next week. My name is Teoksen Ghost Horse. This is First Voices Radio.
Madness is a horse who dares ride him.
get lost in the dark. I guess I follow my stars. In between schism and pride, what prism of light can enlighten my mind? Assassin holds me to a ransom for second guessing the outcome of the day. I could have chosen so many ways. Instead, I grieve for freedom that kept me in a prison of thought with no.